United Airlines.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, my name is Kevin Brown. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Ms. Hughes, who's in the gallery this morning. Your Honor, the court improperly granted the motion to dismiss filed by the defendant, United Airlines, in this case, and in error denied our motion to remand this case for retaliatory discharge to the Circuit Court of Cook County. The initial issue raised by the court is whether the Railroad Labor Act acts as a total preemption to claims that involve employment disputes that may or may not be impacted by the collective bargaining agreement.
Mr. Brown, I'm puzzled by your strategy in your brief, and for that matter, United's strategy. I would have thought the dominant case here is Lingle against Norge, which dealt with this very question under the National Labor Relations Act. And yet you don't seem to be relying on Lingle, and United doesn't discuss Lingle in its response. Is there something I'm missing about why you're not relying on Lingle?
Judge, I believe I am relying on Lingle. But the case I referred to was this court's opinion in Westbrook, which I think dealt with the Lingle decision. I also believe that Lingle and the Hawaiian case are discussed in the Monroe case, which is relied on by United Airlines. And I do believe
I don't see how you say you're relying on Lingle. Your brief doesn't cite Lingle even once.
My reply brief does, Your Honor.
Arguments first raised in reply briefs are forfeited. That's a phrase everyone should have burned in his memory.
I understand, Your Honor. But I do believe that the case law cited stands for the proposition that a retaliatory discharge claim can be brought and that the factual question to be determined is the motivation of the employer.
You say that. That's not what Lingle says. Maybe that's why you're not relying on Lingle. Lingle says the question is not the motivation of the employer. Lingle says the question is whether it is possible to decide the case without interpreting the collective bargaining agreement.
Correct. And
I don't see how it's conceivable that your particular claim could be resolved without interpreting the collective bargaining agreement. But it may be that after Lingle, there's no complete preemption, so the state court rather than the federal court has to decide that question. But it's certainly the case that under Lingle, the dominant question is not motive. So as I say, maybe that's why you're not relying on Lingle?
Judge, but it's our position that you don't have to interpret or rely on the collective bargaining agreement to determine Mrs. Hughes's claim.
Well, surely you do, because to determine whether the motive was retaliatory, the parties are going to go to the collective bargaining agreement. The company will argue, well, this was fine. We were entitled to do what we did. You know, we didn't do anything wrong. And then you'll argue they violated the collective bargaining agreement, right?
I don't think I have to argue the collective bargaining agreement.
Your claim of retaliation will be very weak if it turns out that the collective bargaining agreement authorized the company to do what it did.
Or indeed, as I understand United's argument is that it compelled them to do what they did because other employees also have rights. And maintaining your client as an employee would jeopardize the rights of others under the collective bargaining agreement.
But I think I have the right under the complaint as pled to look at this issue and the facts of the case.
It's just so unrealistic. Look, the other thing that bothers me about this, and maybe this is not within the realm of but the fact of the matter, it's one thing to say that the Railway Labor Act doesn't preempt a suit for assault against your supervisor, right? Tort of assault. That I understand. But this retaliatory discharge, this is just a way of getting your job back, right? This is not being hurt. You just lost your job. And the Railway Labor Act tries to take these matters, you're entitled to a job, what are you entitled to be paid, tries to take them out of the courts and put them into the administrative bodies that the RLA sets up. So this tort of retaliatory discharge is an end run around the desire to get these garden variety disputes over job rights out of the courts.
Judge, but I still think you come back to the fact that what if the evidence discloses that there were 10 persons in a similar position to my client, 7 of which are discharged. Those 7 people were the persons who filed workers' compensation claims, and the 3 persons who didn't file workers' compensation claims were not discharged for the reasons set forth by United. I think that would show that the intent of what United did was to retaliate
but
for the filing of the workers' compensation
claim. Judge Easterbrook's question, what if United replies that that actually we just did what the collective bargaining agreement tells us to do?
But that then becomes a question of fact.
Well, no, it's a question of the meaning of the collective bargaining agreement, right?
If they say
the collective bargaining agreement requires X, Y, Z, so on, then you have to look at the agreement, see what it means.
No, but I believe with a retaliatory discharge claim, even if the employer had the right under the collective bargaining agreement to terminate someone, if I can prove...
No, that's not what Lingle held. Lingle said that if the outcome depends in any way on the meaning of the collective bargaining agreement, state claim is preempted. Over. You can prove any motive you want, but if it is necessary to construe the collective bargaining agreement, preempted. Now, if what you're trying to do is just ask the state court to ignore Lingle, and maybe that's why you've asked us, effectively, to ignore Lingle, you're not going anywhere. And now, maybe you have a right to not go anywhere in state court as opposed to not going anywhere in federal court, but you're not going anywhere.
Judge, but
is there any way that this litigation can be resolved, given United's actual defense based on the collective bargaining agreement, without construing the collective bargaining agreement? If you can't take the collective bargaining agreement, burn it, and still resolve this case, then under Lingle, it's preempted.
Judge, but if you look at the analysis in McCoy, I guess that's my argument. In McCoy, they looked at the evidence presented was what the employer thought the collective bargaining agreement allowed them to do. And the court said that's the type of evidence you look at. If I can present evidence that they're misusing the collective bargaining agreement,
right, but you
to interfere
can't,
with
you,
the workers'
I
compensation
know, but to
rights.
Misuse the collective bargaining agreement means to misinterpret it,
right.
Doesn't
you
it?
You first have to understand what the collective bargaining agreement provides.
Well there's
at that point, Lingle says, case is over. It's preempted.
And again, I disagree because I think the flip side is true as well. Maybe the collective bargaining agreement didn't allow them to do what they could do. But if they show that they believed that they could do it, then I still haven't proven my case. I mean, the case law that I see from the Seventh Circuit shows that you, again, you look at the intent, the motivation of the employer. Otherwise, all these cases would be preempted. Any retaliatory discharge case would be preempted because the employers will always come forward and say, hey, we did what we were allowed to do under the employment agreement. How can you have a retaliatory discharge case otherwise?
If it were a frivolous argument, there wouldn't be preemption.
But to show if the contractual reason provided by the employer was frivolous, don't you still address the issue of the contract?
They said the collective bargaining agreement allows our supervisors to beat up our workers. No, you wouldn't have to pay attention to that.
Well, but would an employer ever say anything like that? Aren't they going to come back and
Final degree enterprises might.
Excuse me?
Final degree enterprises might.
Well, I don't, obviously United, not Simon Degree Enterprises. Judge, I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Fortunately for you, it's just expired. Mr. Stolzenbach.
May it please the Court, my name is Brian Stolzenbach, and I represent United Airlines in this appeal, which does present...
And let me open with the same puzzlement. Why are you not relying on Lingle?
Well, Judge... The honest answer is because we think Monroe is an even closer set of facts and interprets
between
Lingle.
The Supreme Court of the United States and a decision of a panel of the Seventh Circuit, which one governs?
The decision of the Supreme Court of the United
right.
States.
So why is everybody discussing the Seventh Circuit and ignoring the Supreme Court?
Well, we've cited Hawaiian Airlines, which is the Supreme Court's decision in the Railway Labor Act context, which sets up the same test as Lingle for the Railway Labor Act, which is simply, can you decide this case without interpreting the collective bargaining agreement? And we don't think there's any question that you can't, and I think that's it's not just based on our defense that we've raised, but in fact in the complaint itself and throughout the briefing in the district court and in this case and in this court, the plaintiff has asserted that we fired her for
let me tell you why, if it wasn't clear before, why I am puzzled that the plaintiff was not relying on Lingle. It has to be said after Lingle that the National Labor Relations Act does not completely preempt cases involving claims of retaliatory discharge, because it's possible in principle to have such a claim without relying on the collective bargaining agreement. Right, that was the holding. We had held en banc that the National Labor Relations Act completely preempted state law retaliatory discharge claims. We were reversed, 9-0. The Supreme Court said it's essential to draw this distinction. And if that's the governing rule, that seems to say that a claim like the one made by Hughes might be preempted, but not completely preempted. And thus this litigation would have to be in state court. And your need would be to show how, under the Lingle approach, an argument of complete preemption is still with us.
Because we believe that the complete preemption issue, as that term is generally used, was decided in for purposes of contracts under the National Labor Relations Act, which is also which also includes the Labor Management Relations Act, and particularly Section 301 of that act. Claims presenting a dispute under a collective bargaining agreement involving Section 301 of the Labor Management Relations Act are undisputedly completely preempted under AFCO, the Supreme Court's decision in AFCO. And in beneficial...
That's where I get lost. That's essentially what this Court held en banc in Lingle. And we got reversed. That's why you need to be talking about Lingle.
I think what the Supreme Court said in Lingle, even if it may have used terms like complete preemption, is that it
didn't. It held that there was not complete preemption. That's why it reversed us.
But I think the concept that it was reversed upon was actually the ordinary preemption concept. The concept that in that particular case, you didn't have to interpret the collective bargaining agreement to decide the case. Whereas in AFCO, and as well as in Beneficial National Bank...
Have you read Lingle recently?
I have.
Because what the justices held was not that the particular claim Lingle was making could be decided without reference to the collective bargaining agreement. It held that that decision had to be made by a state court rather than a federal court.
Well, to the extent that that's what the Supreme Court held, I think that in the Beneficial National Bank case, which came after Lingle, they clearly stated that Section 301 is still one of the laws that completely preempts claims.
Do you think Lingle's been overruled by accident in a case that didn't discuss it?
I don't think it actually had to be overruled, but certainly
what
the Supreme
Court. What is your conception of complete preemption? I gave the example of a tort suit for, you know, a suit for battery against a company, battery by a supervisor.
I think it's your view
that has to be what?
No.
Brought in.
We're not arguing that any retaliatory discharge claim by an employee in an airline industry covered by a collective bargaining agreement is preempted. In fact,
What are you arguing?
We're arguing that any case on the two separate issues on the ordinary preemption, so-called, you know, claim or argument, if you have to interpret the collective bargaining agreement to decide the case, then it's preempted.
Shouldn't we file Sullivan versus American Airlines?
Because I think Sullivan misinterpreted and added something.
Written by Judge Walker, as Chief Judge, a very, very accomplished jurist.
I think that the case of Sullivan misinterpreted Beneficial National Bank and read something into Beneficial National Bank that wasn't there, which is Beneficial National Bank said that there's complete preemption if the purported state law claim raises a claim for which the exclusive.
A very good point, it seems to me. In the case of the Railway Labor Act, you have this requirement that the matter be submitted to the administrative body rather than to the court, which is obviously not true of the National Labor Relations Act. And that's really the basis of that decision, to me.
That's correct, although I think it's a reading of what Beneficial National Bank said, which is that if the exclusive cause of action is created by federal law, then there's complete preemption. And I think what the Second Circuit mistakenly added to that.
Other circuits have been following the Second Circuit primarily.
True, although the Eighth Circuit has recently continued to say that there's complete preemption.
Only one besides this circuit, I think.
Correct.
Right?
That's correct. But in the Labor Management Relations Act context, in Section 301, it is also the case in the vast majority of cases where the preemption argument is made that the federal court doesn't actually decide the merits because the parties have agreed to arbitrate them. And so the procedure is the same under Section 301 almost all the time as it is here, which is removal from the circuit court of Cook County or whatever state court it may be to the federal court and then immediate dismissal to an arbitral body. It happens to be a statutorily mandated arbitral body in the RLA context, but in the Section 301 context, the same thing happens.
You said before something, not all retaliatory discharge cases are subject to preemption. What do you mean by that?
Well, to take an example, if a plaintiff working for an airline claims that she was fired for some protected activity that gives rise to a retaliatory discharge claim, and the reason the employer gives for having fired her is simply she didn't do a good job. And the only question on the pretext issue, because the plaintiff is, of course, going to argue, well, yeah, I did a good job. The only joined issue on the pretext question in a case like that is whether she did a good job or not. And you don't have to look at the contract in many cases to determine whether she did a good job. United and I have a case in the district court currently involving a flight attendant who was fired after she berated a couple of first-class passengers.
We can't allow that.
She claims she was fired because she filed a workers' compensation claim. We didn't argue preemption because no one has to look at the contract to decide why she was fired. She was either fired because she berated the first-class passengers or because she filed the workers' compensation claim, and you don't have to look at the contract to determine how she treated the passengers. In this case, as I think is well shown by the fact that the plaintiff has never offered to stipulate in this case that we interpreted the contract correctly, she's going to argue quite vociferously that we made up our interpretation of the contract in order to justify her termination. And any decision-making authority, whether it be this court or the System Board of Adjustment.
Well, how does your position differ from what Judge Easterbrook said? That is, if there's a collective bargaining issue, then yes, it has to be referred to these administrative bodies.
My position doesn't differ from what Judge Easterbrook said. That's what we believe is the correct result in this case. So that's what.
But you don't want to go back to the district court and argue, I mean, to the state court and argue to them that they ought to abstain in favor of the National Adjustment Board or whatever they.
Correct, because we think the RLA, like the Section 301 of the LMRA, and like some other laws, such as the National Bank Act, have completely preemptive effect on claims.
But
that,
why?
Because a claim that...
What difference does it make?
A claim that presents a minor dispute on its face raises a question of federal law, because the only place you can pursue a minor dispute is under the federal regime of
but
the National Labor Relations.
But it doesn't raise it, because as you said, there might be no issue involving the collective bargaining agreement.
But the claim of Ms.
Hughes... You gave an example of that.
The claim of Ms. Hughes in this case, though, does in fact raise it. In her complaint and in all her briefing, she specifically states that her argument in this case is that we made up our interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement to give us a pretext for firing her. And there is no way that the district court, if it had gotten to the merits, would have been able to get past that question to answer the ultimate question of why she was fired. I see that I've run out of time. Unless the court has further questions, I will.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.